In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Wednesday, April 12th, AD 2017. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. The Islamic State terror group executed over 140 civilians on April 3rd who tried to escape jihadi-held territory in western Mosul, Iraq, reports the Kurdish Regional Security Council. As the Islamic State continues to be pushed out of its territory in Iraq, the jihadis have been known to systematically kill those caught trying to flee from its territories. Psalm 34:16 says, "The face of the Lord is against evildoers, to cut off the memory of them from the earth." Christians in India are being accused of forcibly converting people at a medical camp. Three of them were taken into custody by the police on Sunday. William Stark of International Christian Concern told The World View why these accusations were made.
In the most recent case we saw in Madhya Pradesh, there was a medical camp that Christians were running, and there was a complaint by one of the Hindu villagers that said they said to me that I would be healed if I believed in Jesus Christ. So his accusation basically said they were trying to induce me to convert to another religion, which wasn't the intention of the person that was sharing their faith.
Stark said that this was not a case of forced conversion, but radical Hindus often use the conversion laws to oppose Christ followers.
Unfortunately, now you're seeing more and more ultra-Hindu nationalists who, if you're out proselytizing or spreading the message or even handing out Bibles in public places, that can lead to you, one, being beaten, and then two, being brought to a police station with the accusation that you're trying to forcibly convert people.
Stark said that sharing the Christian faith is not prohibited by law.
It is legal for an individual to share their faith with another person. Under India's constitution, I think it's Article 25, individuals have the right to freely believe, practice, and propagate a faith of their choosing, which propagate would seem to say you can share your faith with another person, whether they ask or not.
President Donald Trump said yesterday that North Korea is, quote, looking for trouble, unquote, and vowed to get the murderous regime of dictator Kim Jong-un under control with or without China's help. Trump sent the warning in a pair of tweets just days after he met with the Chinese president. Trump indicated a favorable trade deal could await China if they stepped up pressure on North Korea. Adding to tensions, the Wall Street Journal reported Tuesday that activity appeared to be taking place at a North Korean nuclear test site ahead of the April 15th anniversary of the communist country's founding. As Secretary of State Rex Tillerson prepared to meet with his counterpart in Moscow yesterday, the White House accused the Russian government of engaging in a cover-up of the chemical weapons attack last week by Syrian forces that prompted American missile strikes, reports the New York Times. In a declassified four-page report that details United States intelligence on the chemical weapons attack and contains a point-by-point rebuttal of Moscow's claims, the White House asserted that the Syrian and Russian governments had sought to confuse the world community about the assault through disinformation and, quote, false narratives, unquote. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer sought to emphasize the depravity of Syria's use of chemical weapons on civilians during yesterday's briefing. But the way he did it, by crediting Adolf Hitler with a measure of restraint, struck many journalists as confusing and insensitive, reports the Washington Post.
We didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
Spicer seemed to be suggesting that chemical weapons are so bad that even Hitler was not willing to use them. It was a bizarre argument, however, given Hitler's extensive use of poison gas to kill millions of Jews and others in gas chambers. When a reporter noted his comments were causing an uproar on social media, Spicer clarified.
I think when you come to sarin gas, he was not using the gas on his own people the same way that a shot is doing. I mean, there was clearly, I understand your point. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. There was not in the, he brought him into the, to the Holocaust Center. I understand that. But I'm saying in the way that the Assad used them, where he went into towns, dropped them down to innocent into the middle of towns, it was brought to it. So the use of it, I appreciate the clarification there. That was not the intent.
This was ostensibly an attempt to clarify his original remark, yet it was baffling in its own right, since Hitler did indeed gas his own people. Sean Spicer was not the only one who put his foot in his mouth yesterday. So did the United Airlines CEO. Stay tuned for the whole scoop with sound bites and a special report immediately following today's newscast. The man chosen to lead Justice Neil Gorsuch's swearing-in ceremony at the White House was none other than 80-year-old Justice Anthony Kennedy, nominated by President Reagan in 1988, who is rumored to be interested in retirement at the end of June. Bloomberg noted that while Kennedy sided with the four conservatives on overturning Obamacare and allowing for new campaign spending, he has been a dramatic disappointment to conservatives on the two key social issues. In 1992, Justice Kennedy co-wrote an opinion reaffirming the constitutional right to abortion, and to his shame, he wrote the 2015 ruling that legalized homosexual marriage nationwide. Neil Devins, a William & Mary Law School professor, said, quote, Kennedy leaving and being replaced by a Trump pick will almost certainly move the court to the right and perhaps make the court the most conservative court we have had since the 1930s, unquote. A total solar eclipse will cross the continental United States this summer, an event that has not happened in 100 years, reports WorldNetDaily.com. On August 21st, Americans will experience at least 60% of the sun being covered and the resulting semi-darkness. Those within about a 60-mile-wide diagonal line from the Pacific Northwest through South Carolina will see the sky go dark and feel the temperature drop. In some areas of the country, the darkness will last more than 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Moments like these still make many people think of God today. Pastor Mark Biltz, author of the new book, God's Daytimer, suggests God often uses celestial signs to send direct messages to the nations, such as a direct warning to the United States. Jeremiah 10:13 says, When he utters his voice, there is a tumult of waters in the heavens, and he causes the clouds to ascend from the end of the earth. He makes lightning for the rain and brings out the wind from his storehouses. And that's the worldview in 5 minutes on this Wednesday, April 12th, in the year of our Lord, 2017. Invite your friends to listen to this unique Christian newscast at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ. And now, as promised, another special report. United Airlines is in the midst of a public relations disaster. On Sunday, to make room for four airline employees, they bumped four passengers on United Express Flight 3411, which was flying from Chicago to Louisville, Kentucky. None of the four randomly selected passengers wanted to leave the flight, despite the offer to receive double the value of the flight, reports Fox News. When they were told they had no choice, three left voluntarily. But one man, Dr. David Dow, a 69-year-old Vietnamese-American immigrant who specializes in pulmonary disease, refused to leave the airplane and was forcibly removed by Chicago airport security.
What are you doing?
After hitting his head on an armrest across the aisle, he was dragged off unconscious. An eyewitness video of Dow being dragged and bloodied has gone viral, prompting air travelers to denounce United and call for a boycott through social media. United Airlines CEO Oscar Munoz issued a statement Monday to employees defending the airline's position, calling Dow, quote, disruptive and belligerent, unquote, even as some lawmakers called for an investigation into the incident. Later, Munoz issued this laughable statement. quote, "I apologize for having to reaccommodate these customers," unquote. More than 120 million users of the Chinese social media app Weibo had viewed posts hashtagged United Forces passenger off plane, according to the South China Morning Post. Somehow, a little later, Dow made it back on the plane, bleeding from his mouth, and said this in a separate video.
I have to go home. Just kill me.
But perhaps the most bizarre wrinkle in the story was unearthed by the New York Post. Dow was arrested in 2003 after being accused of trading prescription drugs for sexual favors from a male patient he later hired. He denied paying for sex, but was charged with 98 felony drug counts for illegally prescribing and trafficking painkillers, including OxyContin and Percocet. Regardless of Dow's personal sins, the way United Airlines treated him has been described as, quote, brand suicide, unquote. This has been another special report. I'm Adam McManus. If you want the right worldview for your news, you'll want the right worldview for your children's education. That's why we produce the Worldviews in Conflict curriculum for your teens. It's a curriculum that will equip them to engage the war of the worlds. Check it out at theworldview.com/curriculum. That's theworldview.com/curriculum.
Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five, and we've been raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado for quite some time. And we are looking to share with you a vision for parenthood on this edition of the program, but not just parenthood, but also adoption. Now, this program will apply to every single person out there who is a mommy or a daddy for anybody out there. And so today, the subject is adoption, and we take it from James 1:27, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world." This is true religion. And there's a lot of fake stuff out there, but James wants to step forward and say there are some objective, relevant forms of faith that manifests itself. And it manifests itself in bridling the tongue, in looking out for the orphan and widow, and keeping oneself unspotted from the world. This is true religion. This is that pure stuff. And the word visit means to visit. That means we are to visit the orphans and the widows. This is doing the things that Jesus did. This is to be like Jesus. This is to be in fellowship with him, to walk with him, and to do the things that he does. And so absolutely everybody in the church must be involved at some level in reaching out to the orphan and the widow. And so that's why this program is so incredibly relevant today, and I hope that this will be of huge benefit to those who are listening. Well, the new book just published, and it's come out through generations.org, is called Adoption, Encouragement and Advice for a Hopeful Journey by Sherry McMinn. And friends, this book is a virtual compendium of a encouragement manual for people who are going through parenting at any level, but certainly those who are parenting the orphan. And so what an incredible, practical book. And I'm looking at, 400 pages of encouragement, practical advice, hope, faith, love, all of these things brought together by the author, Sherry McMinn, who's in studio with me today. She's the mother of 11 children, most of whom are graduated and often running with various callings that God has placed upon their lives. They've homeschooled for many years. As far back as I can remember, I've known Sherry for a very long time. But she has adopted 5 children with her husband, but her husband has passed away as of a couple of years ago. So now she's a widowed mother, and she has continued to be faithful to parenting the children that God has placed in her home. And they have adopted five, as I mentioned, two sets of siblings. She is a woman of faith. She is a tremendous encouragement to the brothers and sisters that gather around her. And I can testify that to that myself. Sherry, welcome to the Generations Broadcast.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm so pleased to be here.
It's great to have you. And this book has been in the works for a long time, since what, 2011?
Yes.
Why did it take you so long, Sherry?
Well, first of all, time.
Right.
But second, I think that when I started it back in March of 2011, God had some more things for me to learn. And my husband passed away in 2013, so I took a rabbit trail and wrote my first book, which is Our Five Generation Legacy of Faith. And then I came back to this book for my next project, and it took me about 2 years to finish it up and then get it to my publisher. Mm. And it just takes a long time to get a book going.
Right.
But I really feel that the release of it at this time is very pertinent, and I am pleased to have it done.
Yeah.
It's finished, and then my next book's going to be on widowhood, so hopefully I'll see you in 3 more years with
right.
that.
Well, it's an incredibly important topic, and you know, as I have counseled folks who have adopted and parents who are working through that that process of raising children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, I think the most powerful message, if someone to say, well, boil it all down, what would you say is the most important message to communicate to anybody who's adopting or raising kids? I would say it's the Lamentations 3 passage, verse 26. It's a good thing that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord.
Yes.
And it's just, it takes patience, lots and lots of patience, and lots of hope in that we patiently wait and hope for the salvation of the Lord. I guess it's a little bit like Moses raising the rod and that 2.6 seconds at which the Red Sea did not part.
You know, that's right.
There's that moment at which you're saying to yourself, boy, I'm waiting for the salvation of the Lord, and may it show up within the next 2.6 seconds.
Right, but it doesn't always show up in 2.6 seconds.
That's right.
Sometimes it's 20 years. Uh-huh. And when we're raising our children, we have to remember that our focus is to get them into heaven, not to get them into Harvard.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And you're not always going to see immediate results.
No, I have a child right now who is wandering far from our family and far from the Lord, but I know at some point he will, I trust him in his promises that he will protect and provide for that child and keep that child's heart. And I also went through that same experience with my oldest son, who's my stepson. He was a prodigal for 10 years, but he came back through fervent prayer and constant connection.
You know, I think a lot of adoptive parents walk into adoption with a lot of expectations, and it seems to me that they go through a period of time in which they're crushed. The immediate expectations are crushed, and they don't know what to do.
Right.
How do you respond to people who are dealing with broken expectations in the adoptive process?
Well, I think parents who are parenting traumatized children, which all children from foster care, from adoption, from orphanages are traumatized children because they've been separated from their birth parents. I think you have to realize that they have tremendous grief that they have to go through. And in that process, you have grief to go through. And you will be angry, you'll be in denial, you'll be frustrated, but then you have to move on and really see that what you are doing is being the hands of Jesus. And if you can just look to the Lord for your strength and just show up every day to do your job, His mercies are tender and new every morning, and you can do it.
Mm. So much of this is work God is doing on us. And I
yes.
think every parent could agree with that, that as we walk through these difficulties with our children, God is working on us, oftentimes in order that He might work on our children, but He's working on us first and foremost. He's using our children to get through to us. Have you ever experienced that, Sherry?
Definitely. You know, I'm going to be 60 years old next year. You can all help me celebrate. And I'm like, seriously, Lord, I do not want to learn more patience. I already am perseverant. but yet he gently draws me, guides me, leads me. Mm. And I think that the most important thing that you can do as an adoptive parent is remember the pit of sin that the Lord pulled you out of, and he set you on high ground, and you need to help your children go through that same experience. They carry so much baggage when they come into your home, even if they're a tiny little baby. And there are some families who really haven't had a lot of problems with their adopted children. They just have typical parent raising problems. But a lot of families just have no idea what it's really going to be like. And I hope that they'll read my book to go into this eyes wide open and then feel equipped that no matter what battle is before them, they have some strategies that they can help their children cope. They can help themselves cope, and they can just keep going every day. I think more than anything, like our faith journey, that is just do it every day, follow the Lord every day, dedicate your day to him, seek him, follow him, obey him, you know, confess your sins before him and let him refresh you. I think that's the same thing that is going on with adopted children as you raise them.
Sherry, can you say that in your experience in adoption, there were ever any moments in which you were just utterly shocked at what you saw? I mean, almost traumatized yourself by the adoptions, where you woke up to a reality that you had never expected.
Yes, I definitely did that. And I think what a lot of people don't want to believe is that your precious, darling little children absolutely can have the worst of behaviors. They can be fire starters. They can exhibit sexual behavior. They can lie chronically. They can be evil in their heart. They can hurt people. And it just, you just can't believe it. You think, wow, we're a Christian family. I can't believe that this is happening. And I can't tell anybody because it's so embarrassing or horrifying. But you have to be able to surround yourself with a circle of trusted people in your life, your elders at your church, your closest family and friends. And you have to be able to draw those people into a network of support around you, because it is horrifying sometimes what happens. And I know my biological children were completely shocked and devastated a couple times and still are, because, you know, it's a lifelong journey.
Yeah. You know, I think that every Christian really needs to make a list of all of the reasons why Jesus had to come. And, you know, as you're dealing with sin and as you're dealing with the consequences of sin and the shock and the devastation of it all, you know, at the very end of the day, I think if we just put at the end of the page, and that's why Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came and hung on that cross, we can be satisfied that he is sufficient to take care of these problems.
Yes, he's sufficient to take care of you in parenting your children, no matter how sinful and inept you may be. He is faithful, and he will provide for your children who are in your household because he knows that you seek and serve him daily.
Sherry McMinn has written the book Adoption, Encouragement and Advice for a Hopeful Journey, a gigantic 400-page encouragement for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of adoptive parents around the world. Friends, check it out at generations.org. Talk to us a little bit about your oldest adopted son. And this, I think, would be a good story for those who are listening. This was not an easy adoption, yet God has been gracious to you and to him along the way.
Yes, my oldest adopted son, we adopted when he was 7, and his younger sister came with him. And they had experienced profound neglect, which can almost be worse than physical abuse, but they also had experienced abuse. They had been in several different placements, and they were in a failed placement and were actually legally free. And so they came to us, and they were, you know, just darling for the honeymoon. And then the hurricane happened, and this son had just a lot of trauma and baggage, and including when he came to us, he was on several behavior modification drugs. He was really behind in school. In fact, our caseworkers actually said homeschooling would be good for him because he needs the one-on-one attention. Mm. And as he entered his teenage years, he got into a lot of sinful acting out behaviors, which were really, really tough for all of our family to deal with. But the wonderful thing is that at an early age, God had put into him to have the desire to be a Marine. Mm. And so my husband and I encouraged him in that. We believed firmly that that's what he was supposed to do as his life's calling. And we got him ready through that. And thankfully, through homeschooling, we were able to help him, you know, learn firearm skills and discipline and physical fitness and all of those things. And he took a year off after high school graduation and just worked in the workforce, and then he was ready to go into the Marines. And he has done fantastic. Mm. He's had his third promotion, and he's been deployed several times and just visited us not too long ago. And I was just so encouraged that he is a man of faith, and he has courage. He knows where he's going if something happens to him. And I'm just so pleased, and I'm excited for him because he is living the life that God put in his desire in his heart for.
And if you were able to go back 6, 7, 8 years and talk to yourself, Sherry, like where you are right now,
right.
You go back 6 or 7 or 8 years, talk to yourself as you were working with this young man in his teenage years, what would you tell yourself?
Well, I tell myself to not give up.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, and I've been to this point, want to give up. They want to run away from it. They want to remove themselves from the situation, and that will only be one more trauma to that child. So you just have to get up every morning, and you have to just attack, and you have to battle. And I think it's really important. I know single parents can raise adopted children, and this book speaks to them too, but a husband and wife need to be a unified tag team, because when one parent loses the desire, the ability, the focus, just the physical energy, the other parent can take over. And thankfully, my husband and I were able to do that. You know, my son did some things that I'm still just astounded about, and it's a miracle of God that he now is using what he endured in his early years in foster care to be courageous and tough and brave and strong and to rely on the Lord. So just do not give up.
Yeah.
Equip yourself by researching your child's issues. Talk to those who can give you wise counsel. If you're a single parent, find that one best friend who you can confide in. Otherwise, husbands and wives, draw nearer to each other as a really strong foundation for raising these children that are very challenging. And Kevin, maybe you'll talk about later, but my favorite part of this book is the creative dates that couples can do.
Yeah.
You know, most foster and adoptive parents can never leave their children in care with anybody else. So if you want to date your spouse, you have to do it at home. And so for $25 spent at the dollar store, you can have more than 75 creative dates and just have silly fun to reconnect, to remember why you got married, and to regain the joy that God wants you to have in your marriage as the foundation for being a strong parent to raise these kids.
75 plus creative dates involved in the back of the book. And that's important to you, isn't it? That that parents are able to sustain a strong marriage in the process. Sometimes the children will manipulate as well and triangulate. What is that?
A good way to look at it is think of a triangle. It has 3 points, 3 sides. And a child can be one corner and pit the other 2 corners against each other. It could be a parent and a teacher. It could be a parent and an elder at the church. It could be a parent and a neighbor, another relative. That child, sweet and darling as they may be at 4 years old, has had to learn to survive. And in order to survive, will do anything to win and be in control. So parents do not want to be in a triangulated relationship with their adopted child. They instead want to have a unified front. And one of the chapters in the book is called Good Cop, Bad Cop. And that's what you do to avoid triangulation. You have to talk to each other before you discipline. You have to talk to each other when problems arrive. You have to communicate all the time with your spouse. And if your spouse is away for the day, that's fine. Just talk to them when you get together again in the evening. But you cannot let that child divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. You'll be amazed at how a toddler can divide and conquer his or her parents. Uh-huh. And of course, in a biological family, that happens too. But it seems like it's on steroids in an adoptive family.
Mm. Now, typically, adoptive children have emotional and social challenges in terms of handling things. Talk to that. How do you train a child, or how do you handle that emotional instability or immaturity?
That's just an excellent question. And I think the interesting situation is that adopted and children who are in foster care, they're really savvy. And they seem to know all about the world. They know about the internet and all the sin that can happen. But yet they are years behind emotionally and socially because they have not had good, nurturing parenting to teach them simple things like social skills, communication, how to be upset and then calm down again. And when they act out, it's like a hurricane that hits you. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be with them in the moment. You have to remain calm. Mm-hmm. Even though you're exploding on the inside, you have to remain calm. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of strategies throughout the book that teach about how to do that and also teach coping skills to your kids so that they can learn, even though it might not be till 15, 16, 17, or even 20, how to express their anger or frustration, especially at the word no, mm-hmm. and then be able to discuss it, calm down, and accept it. You know, a lot of our experience in life is about duty, and kids do not want to have to perform chores or do schoolwork or even obey their parents when it's time to go to bed. And kids do not want to hear the word no. No, you can't watch a video game, it's bedtime. So what are some strategies for helping them with that? And the underlying thing is that when they've had trauma, especially by loss of their biological parent, mm-hmm. they do not have trust. And you have to spend years building your relationship so they learn to trust you, mm-hmm. that you are giving them good advice. When they go outside and it's 30 degrees and there's snow on the ground, and they run outside barefoot and with no coat, they have to learn to trust you to say, hey, I love you. You need to come back in and put on snow boots and a coat and a hat. Instead, they'll just keep going and playing. And so you have to go out there, take the stuff to them, stand with them while they put it on and encourage them. And this is something that takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And parents have to realize that building a relationship with their children, especially their adopted children, is something that will override work that has to be done, entertainment, family reunions, whatever it takes. You have got to provide your child with that strong relationship that will build trust. And then one day they will say to you, you were right, Mom. It's freezing out here, and I'll put my coat on.
Yeah. Sherry, I know a lot of adoptive children have had sexual trauma. How do adoptive parents handle these kids? How do they walk them through the repairing process, the healing process, after they've been through these traumatic experiences?
That's a really good point, and I do talk about the subject in several chapters. I once heard that 90% of children in foster care have been sexually abused. And that's a horrifying thing for us Christian, happily married, sexually healthy people to hear. I mean, it's frightful. It's scary.
Yeah.
And what about the kids that come from these horrible war-torn countries where there's tyrannical rule and no appreciation of children and women, and so children are just treated as property that can be used and thrown away? And I think it's really important that you have to be able to have eyes wide open of what could happen, and you have to be proactive in preventing things happen in your home. Mm-hmm. We had things happen in our home, but then we dealt with them and we mm-hmm. trained our kids. You know, honey, this is not an appropriate behavior. This is what happens in a family. This is what God says, according to the Bible, that these things are to wait for marriage. And in marriage, it's a wonderful thing. Outside of marriage, it's not. It's very sinful and harmful emotionally and physically. And you have to be able to be really brave in talking to your kids and even to a three-year-old. Hmm. How do you talk to a three-year-old about safe boundaries? Well, you have to have safe physical touch, like side hugs and, you know, kissing on the cheek and things like that. You have to teach them the right ways and help them and forgive them when they mess up and do the wrong things. And one thing that I really encourage is that parents who are thinking about adopting, they adopt children who are younger than any birth children they may have. Mm-hmm. First of all, that helps the birth order. Second of all, that pretty much circumvents any of the adopted children being predatory to the older children. But you have to help your older children by letting them know that, you know, if you see or hear or are aware of this type of situation, you come to us right away. You tell us what happened. We want honesty and transparency in this family so that everybody has felt safety. Felt safety is when people feel safe in their own environment. And we need to teach our kids, just like we would normal, typical, biological children, we have to teach them about the boundaries of, you know, if you find a firearm, don't touch it, come tell us. If you see pornography, don't touch it, come tell us. Mm-hmm. And this will go a long way in helping your children all have felt safety, as well as yourself. You know, one of the strategies I talk about is 24/7 supervision, which means that, you know, you need to know where your kids are at all times. When they're young, literally, you have to be with them all the time. As they get a little older, you can loosen the reins. Then we always institute a policy of check on our kids every 15 minutes. So even now, my youngest child is a teenager. When we're at church, I check 15 minutes. I know where everybody is, what they're doing. And there's just a lot of strategies, you know, keeping doors open, things like that are in the book. But I think it's super important to realize it could happen and address it to prevent it and then know what to do if something happens.
Now, Sherry, this book, Adoption, Encouragement and Advice for a Hopeful Journey, is for adoptive parents who are in the midst of it, like right now. But it's for a lot of other people, too. This is crucial for anybody who's interested in the James 1:27 view that we are to be visiting the adoptive child. We're to be visiting the orphan and the widow in their affliction. So how does this apply to others? Who should be reading this book, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people should be reading this book. I think that anybody who is a Christian and attends church and there's an adoptive family, or there should be an adoptive family, because I think all churches should encourage adoption. I think church leaders should read it. I think congregational members who are coming alongside adoptive families or families who provide foster care, because the battle is the same.
Yeah.
I also think it's for close extended family members like grandparents, close aunts and uncles. I think it's also for really close friends in your community. Anybody who's in a community support situation like a medical provider, a therapist, a caseworker, a school teacher, if your children go to institutional school, I think all of these people will benefit because this is the most transparent, eyes wide open adoption book I've read. Of course, I wrote it, but I read a lot of other books, and mm-hmm. I don't think that they say, hey, this is what really happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it in such a way that I don't feel like I betrayed my children's confidence, but I wanted other people to understand this is what our family has gone through. This is what probably other families are going through. And you need to be aware that you can't just come up and talk to my teenage daughter all by yourself. Mm-hmm. You need to have, if it's a man, you need to have your wife right mm-hmm. there. You know, adopted children can be very manipulative, mm-hmm. and they can be pathological liars. They can make up stories. We have a really good Christian therapist in our small hometown that has really helped our family. But I told her my biggest concern when I first met with her is that my child is going to tell you that I'm doing all these things and mm-hmm. I am not.
Right.
And she said, I get it. I have your back. Your mm-hmm. child has reactive attachment disorder. I know what that's going to do. So I think it's for a lot of people that create the support net for each family who I hope each family has a support net. I think it's for all of them. And just so that people have a sensitivity in your church community, your neighborhood, or, you know, if you're blessed to live in a small town like I am with a lot of caring people, they understand, oh, I need to especially be careful and love and nurture mm-hmm. this child in a safe way because this child is hurting.
You know, I think the thing that is most important about a book like this, Sherry, is that you've brought together a realism and an optimism at one time. It's important that, you know, present the real story, the bad
yes.
news, but also the good news, and this perfect mating of the good news to the bad news, which is ultimately what God does in His Word when He brings the gospel to a sinful people. And that's what you're attempting to do, is reflect the gospel of Jesus Christ in a very realistic setting, and that is the world of adoption. I'd encourage this book. What would you say would be a really excellent foster parent or adoptive parent in all of your assessment of the adoption process? What do you think? What are the qualities or the virtues of that parent prepared for adoption? Obviously, everybody can't be totally prepared, but how would you define that?
Well, I think that they need to be a Christian and they need to be actively growing in their faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if they are married, I think both husband and wife need to be on the same page. I think that they need to be have a heart that's teachable and they're interested in learning, whether it's through reading books, going to trainings, watching online things. I think they need to learn and grow in their parenting and understanding of child development. I think that's very important to understand basic child development, what to expect at when a child is 2 or 8 or 18, so that you can adjust your expectations and the way you communicate with your child. But they also need to be, I think, fun, loving, nurturing people.
Hmm.
You know, traumatized children just have a hard road. And the parents who raise them do too. And it's really important that we know how to maintain our joy by having a love for the Lord and being glad in our service to Him, no matter how hard the battle can be, but also just to laugh in the face of adversity.
Mm.
I was blessed to have a husband who often, I have to confess, frustrated me when he acted like he was 14. But on the other hand, he made me laugh. And we sometimes would have such an arduous day that all we could do was fall into bed, laugh and say goodnight and wake up the next day hoping that things would go better. So I think that that's really important. But we as a society have lost really high quality parenting. And if you don't learn high quality parenting from your parents, then you need to find a way to learn that. And there's many good resources. I've listed them at the back of my book. And people need to have a vision for parenting, but they also need to have the skills for parenting. One of the topics that I bring up in the book is how our culture right now is really focused on screens. We have our cell phones, we have our iPads, we have our laptops, we have our television, we have our Netflix. And we need to live face-to-face with our adopted children and our spouse and our other children that we may have. We need to experience real life together. And that means going to the grocery store, doing the dishes, doing the chores, going together to Dairy Queen, riding in the car together, going to church together. It means living life, not just spectating a screen. And a lot of people are introducing screens to their children at a really young age, and I advocate that you need to be reading books aloud.
Mm.
You need to be doing puzzles, playing board games, because this builds relationship, and relationship is the most crucial thing in building trust, which is the most crucial thing in raising traumatized children.
How important was the farm? You live on a farm. How important do you think that was, Sherry, for your five adopted children?
Well, I think it has many benefits. First of all, I think animals and caring for them are very therapeutic. We had a situation one time where one of our children was not feeding one group of animals properly, and three of them, very valuable, died in one day because they had starved. And that child learned a very valuable lesson in caring for animals, which is practice for caring for people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it teaches a pro-life attitude. I think animals are, especially baby animals, rabbits, little kid goats, kittens, dogs are so fun to hold. They're really an important tool, I think, for children to be able to have as a comfort and a coping skill, because, you know, you can tell your rabbit how mad you are and it's not going to offend them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pet your dog and that makes the dog feel better and it makes you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 240-acre property, which I have to say I've not ever walked the whole way along it.
Mm-hmm.
I've not been on every single acre, but it enabled our children to have a lot of freedom to go outside and play a lot, which, again, I think is a lost skill in our society. They're saying that, you know, things like swinging and playing on a teeter-totter, those build balance and sensory skills in your children, which a lot of traumatized children lack in sensory integration.
Mm-hmm.
And so our kids spend a lot of time outside, okay, which is really helpful.
Hmm. We just have a minute left, Sherry, and I'd like you to speak to that family out there who've adopted and perhaps they're in the crisis mode today. They're just about on their very last straw considering rehoming their children, hanging on that very thin thread. How would you encourage those parents today?
Well, first of all, I think that the Lord knows your situation. And the Lord has answers, and I want to be the first to thank you for caring for orphans and putting them in your family. Don't give up on your child. You will be one more traumatic loss if you send your child away from you. Stay in connection, get some helpful resources, get some people who can help you, pray for you. I think prayer is super important for people who are supporting adoptive families. You can do this. I'm just a mom. I'm just a farm wife. I'm just almost 60 years old. Yet God enabled me to do this, and you can do it too.
Amen. That's the message of this new book, Adoption, Encouragement and Advice for a Hopeful Journey, available at our website, kevinswanson.com or generations.org. The book is by Sherry McMinn, who's had many years of experience with adoption. And friends, this is a world of wisdom. This will be a compendium of encouragement to your family, especially for your marriage. Adoption, Encouragement and Advice for a Hopeful Journey, available at our website, generations.org. And perhaps you might even want to get a few extra copies for those adoptive families that you know in your church and your community. Available at our website, generations.org. Sherry, thank you so much for being here today.
It was a pleasure, Kevin. Thank you.
And you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with the program by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. And you can get our resources at kevinswanson.com or generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation. Folks, under Obamacare, the average family health care premiums now have exceeded $18,000, and more premium increases averaging 25% are expected for next year in 39 states. And remember, over 1,000 Obamacare plans cover abortion, and that's most of them. Five states offer no abortion-free plans at all. And you know that all Obamacare plans contain the contraceptive abort-efficient mandate. So what do Christians do? Well, I'll tell you what we have done. My family has gone with the Samaritan Medical Sharing Ministry since 1999. Over 17 years, we have shared our medical needs with brothers and sisters in Christ, and they have shared theirs with us. And the cost? Well, it's about one-third of what the average family pays under Obamacare. And Samaritan Ministries does not support the killing of unborn children. Our family has saved over $200,000 in insurance premiums over the last 17 years, and we have helped literally hundreds of Christian brothers and sisters with their medical needs. We write checks every month to different families who have needs to cover. How cool is that? On top of all of that, we can support the lives of unborn children while the powerful systems in Washington are doing just the opposite. I want to encourage you to check out Samaritan Ministries as an option for your family. Imagine healthcare sharing in a Christian way, protecting life as Christians do at one-third the cost. Just check it out at SamaritanMinistries.org and mention Kevin Swanson when you sign up, and we'll send you a free copy of my new book, Family Life. That's SamaritanMinistries.org.